Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey. This is episode number 40, and we have the underground strength coach himself, Zach Evanesh, with us today. Zach's an independent strength coach out there and most known for his work with wrestling and different fighters and whatnot, but he has a couple facilities and is an author and a guy that I've been following for quite some time, so I wanted to bring him on the show and share him with everybody. We talk about a lot of things in this episode. We talk about his philosophy when training as wrestlers, what a sample workout looks like. We talk a little bit about, you know, underground or, you know, non-traditional training methods. Talk a little bit about, he's one of the first guys that I saw that really put progressions and protocols to some of these non-traditional strength training methods that I saw out there. And we talk a little bit about passion and where his philosophies come from, why he's gotten into what he's doing, and how he's able to bring it every day with tons of energy. And you'll get that with this interview. You'll understand what I'm talking about. But tons of great one-liners, tons of nuggets in there. And by the time I looked up at the end of it, I had multiple pages of notes and really, truly enjoyed him being on the show. We always want to recognize our sponsors, IgnitionAPG.com, as well as EliteForm.com. Check their websites out. And if you're in the car, if you like to listen to these episodes in the car or while you're working out, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes. If you're more of a visual person like myself, YouTube, either place, you can subscribe and get these episodes each week, as well as downloading any of the other episodes that you might have missed. And if you wouldn't mind leaving a rating and review for me, that gives me some good feedback. One, I want to continue to make this the best show for everybody, but it also helps me continue to share this message and share it with other strength coaches out there that maybe are unaware. But want to get to the episode, sit back and enjoy this, and we'll see you on the flip side. All right, guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. Got Zach Evanesh with me. Very excited to talk to this guy finally, man. This guy I've been following for a long time. He's a good dude. He's the underground strength coach, man, and I'm fired up that you're on the show, brother. Appreciate you coming on.
Cool. I'm excited. Just the guests that you've had on the show, just, you know, all those guys are the guys I really love to learn from. I look up to them. I'm lucky to call some of them friends, and they've, you know, many of them just served as mentors from near and from far.
No doubt, man. Well, you're one of those guys as well, man, and you've done a lot in the field and have been a resource for me throughout my career as well, so I appreciate the work that you do. Hey, Zach, do me a favor, for the guys that don't know you as well, go into a little bit of your journey, how you got into strength and conditioning and then kind of where you're at right now.
Right, so right now, I'm an independent strength conditioning coach. I've got two facilities, small facilities, and I never saw myself, you know, being in this field. When I started working out, it was the end of eighth grade for me, and that was 1989. That was June of 1989. This was an era of muscle and fitness, muscular development. There was no – anything that was strength and conditioning related was just – you know, you didn't know about it, because once that early 80s came around and Arnold got into the movies, everything was based on really appearance. So I learned all my training as bodybuilding methods. And I played soccer as a young kid through elementary and middle school. When I got to high school, my older brother, who was very, you know, physical, very aggressive, very combat oriented, he convinced me to join the wrestling team. And it was very hard-nosed team, real blue-collar kids. And I never wrestled, and I got my ass handed to me time and time again. And I was in pretty good shape, and I really fell in love with training and having a real tough time as a wrestler. I got pinned in every match my freshman year, every match. And it really just fired me up to lift, and I also got addicted to working out. Right. And I would read every bodybuilding magazine. I read Arnold's Education of a Bodybuilder, the encyclopedia. I read them hundreds of times, just over and over. So I trained exactly like what you saw of his books, and I really developed a bodybuilder physique. and it completely worked against me with regards to performance, at least high performance, you know, real high level performance. And that is what really was the beginning. Oh, it was like the beginning of a journey that led to a lot of injuries, a string of injuries through sports. I'd get injured through wrestling. I'd get injured during workouts. And, you know, that's what some people call all show and no go. I was doing stupid stuff like cable crossovers, pec deck, side lateral, you know, side dumbbell side raises. And to make a long story short, as much as I felt in love with lifting, I went on and became a pretty successful teenage bodybuilder. But as I got older and into my like early to mid 20s, I started changing the way I trained. I started researching, you know, the internet was out back when I started, there was no internet.
That's right.
The internet was out, and I was able to kind of research what really inspired me, which was old school bodybuilders. Like, I really was inspired by the physiques of guys like Dave Draper, Arnold, Franco, Ken Waller. And I started really paying attention to the fact that those guys were strong.
Right.
Like, they were deadlifting 495. You saw these guys incline dumbbell pressing 150s. And I started taking more notice to things like when Arnold would talk about breaking the rules when you train, like squatting until, you know, for 50 sets out in the woods and just not really following the rules of a perfectly organized training program. And being a wrestler, a former wrestler, I always had that for my coaches. They trained us to really be tough. And that is something that I never left me from wrestling. So my workouts, I always wanted them to like beat the crap out of me. I wanted to be challenged. Or if I trained with somebody, I wanted to make them quit. I wanted to make them throw up. And I would train heavy, fast. So as I got older and I matured mentally, I started kind of designing my own training versus following what I found, you know, in the bodybuilding magazines. So I felt like there was a void inside of me, and the UFC was that up-and-coming thing. There was wrestlers like Mark Kerr and Mark Coleman and Randy Couture winning. So I started getting involved in jiu-jitsu, and I found this place in an inner city after researching something that was called shoot fighting, because back then it wasn't even called MMA.
Right.
It was called no-holds-barred fighting. And I was like, man, I got something to prove to myself. And I also, you know, the maturity I developed through my training and just getting older and getting away from bodybuilding, I had like much less fear to engage in combat. So I joined up this one place, and the guy who actually ran it is the big guy, Big Dan, who's a UFC ref. He refs like the main events.
Oh,
and it was called Shoot Fighting, and there wasn't a whole lot of instruction going on. It was kind of like, you wrestled with people, you fought with people, you always walked out of there like in pain or the black eye. And after a short time, I entered a jiu-jitsu competition, and I lost a very close match to a judo black belt after a real short time. And that I was so fired up from losing that I started training like crazy for the next tournament, real intense. And while training, I tore my ACL, and I had several injuries leading up to that, multiple times straining my lower back. I had a rotator cuff, a grade 3 strain. It was pretty legit, and I didn't know about prehab, rehab, or any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that ACL tear just like set me over, and I think I was like 26 at the time, maybe 25, and that injury just like, I remember saying to myself like, goddamn, look at me. Like, I could squat 455. I could deadlift 495. I could bench 275 for 6 reps. How are these, you know, how am I getting hurt all the time? I was, like, at such a, like, I was up to here with it. And I said, you know what, I'm going to start researching how to train wrestlers so no wrestlers ever have to go through my pain. And I came across Elite FTS. And that was really my big aha moments. I spent so much time on that website just researching every article by Dave Tate, Jim Wendler, I was constantly asking those guys questions. You know, at the time, Buddy Morris was Coach X, and I think they had Tommy Myslinski on there as 42 or something like that. And I asked those guys so many questions. I printed out every West Side Barbell article that Louie had on his website.
Yeah.
All the Powerlifting USA.
Yep.
And all that info really got me to start understanding what true, you know, training for performance was. So through that, I just started experimenting on myself as soon as my ACL surgery went through. I mean, I remember I was on the hospital bed, and before they put me under anesthesia, I said to myself, as soon as I get out of this surgery, like, I'm waging war on, like, the world of wrestling, strength, and conditioning. Like, I'm no wrestler will ever go through my pain. And I have never stopped since then. I've been like a madman possessed, like always trying to learn.
Right.
And I've certainly made so many mistakes since then and even still do. And probably one of the best pieces of advice I got way, way, way back then when I was just training guys out of the garage was when Buddy Morris said, every training program is flawed. It's never going to be perfect. And he spoke about how sometimes he'd be like, you know, training the NFL guys, the D1 guys. And he said, I'll have a workout up on that whiteboard. And he's like, you know, 15 minutes in, I'm up there erasing stuff, changing stuff, because, you know, they're not ready for those things. And when he said those things, I never forgot them. And that's also what inspired me to be a better listener to the athletes I trained, both verbally, non-verbally. So my time of like training and getting into things was, at the time I lived with my parents and I started training people out of my parents' garage, very small garage. I mean, crazy small. I trained them in the garage. I trained them in the backyard and I was rehabbing my knee. I couldn't barely, you know, speed walk. So I would ride my bike and they would jog next to me. We'd ride my bike, to the local, playground. Or we'd go to the water towers, which was up the street, and I'd make them, like, sprint up the water towers, then come down, and I was, you know, reading about leaping and bounding, and I was doing everything wrong. I had kind of concepts that I was mixing together. I was blending, you know, the breaking the rules bodybuilding methods, and I was blending, at the time, it was the functional training craze, where everything you saw was, like, staying on a wobble board, train on one foot. You know, I was confused and all that stuff. But the stuff that really connected with me was the things I read on Elite FTS. And that's what helped me progress from my family, my parents' house, picking up stuff. Back then, I don't even think eBay existed. I was buying stuff off of newspaper classified ads. It's some real sketchy areas. Like, I'm talking areas where it's like, dude, some of the most dangerous areas in the country I went to. And I remember, like, hiding money in, like, this sock, hiding a little money in that sock just in case something bad happened when I was picking up equipment. And I was collecting equipment, and I knew when I started training those first few kids out of my parents' house for $5 a workout, I knew that I was going to do this. Like, I was going to commit to it. So I was like collecting equipment, and I was engaged at the time. And my fiance and I, while we were house hunting, I didn't really say, oh, we need to have a house with a two-car garage. But I was kind of like saying, oh, I want to be able to work out in the garage. Like, just really in the front of my mind, all I was thinking about was, I'm going to get a house with a two-car garage. I don't care how crappy this house is, but I'm going to turn that two-car garage into a training compound, and I'm gonna train people, and I'm gonna turn wrestlers into monsters. And we luckily did find a house with a two-car garage, and that's the first thing I did is we sheetrocked the garage, painted it. I mean, I rigged that whole thing out, and I picked up, you know, I was using my teaching salary to buy gym equipment, and whatever I got paid from training people. Immediately, the money went to my hand and went to the hand of the contractors who were working on the house. And it was a tough process because at the time you didn't have social media to connect with coaches. You couldn't send, you know, I don't know. You couldn't send Martin Rooney or Joe DeFranco a Facebook message. You couldn't reach out to Joe Ken on Twitter or Dr. Yassi's through email. It just, that stuff wasn't available. Everything, if you wanted to like talk to somebody, you had to pay to get into some sort of like private group on a phone call with them. And that's how I got all my knowledge, was it was always, I had to pay this guy to get into this group, pay for this product. You just, YouTube wasn't even out.
Right.
And it took a lot of money from my teaching salary to learn how to run any sort of business. You know, there was no books at all or any kind of like program to teach a strength conditioning coach how to start their business. So I did everything on the fly. I used my public speaking, my comfort in public speaking, being a teacher. I had no problem, you know, always speaking in front of kids, athletes. So I did that, and I transitioned from parents' house to my to the garage of the house we bought. I trained people out of that garage for a year before we even lived in the house, because the house was such a crap style. And I was in that house. I opened the first gym in June of 2007. So I was in that house for about 4 years training athletes out of that garage. And then I got that first small warehouse gym. We've been there 6.5 years. And but even like if I go back even further on, when I was in high school, like kids were like asking me to write them workout programs. And I laugh because when people are like, how long have you been like doing this? I'm like, man, when I was in high school, like all my friends were like, Zach, like write me a workout for home, for my home gym, this gym. And I loved doing it. Kids would call me up. My friends, they'd be like, dude, can you come and like train me at the gym? And I'd be at the gym in the summertime all day. And I remember my dad's like, where are you all day? I was like, I'm at the gym training my friends. He's like, you get paid for that? It's like, no, I love it. I'll do it for free.
That's right. And
I was 15, 16, finally 17. My dad goes to me. I'll never forget. He's like, you are a lousy businessman. We always laugh because I was just training people. I would do my homework at the gym. I'd sit at the juice counter where they made the protein shakes. And I just wanted to be around hearing the weights clanking. And I still feel like to this day, you know, my best moments are in a crowded gym when it's like very hot, no air conditioning.
Yep.
The music's pumping. Like I'll take that any day over, you know, when I'm writing. Like I love doing my ebooks. I love writing. But there's something about working with a bunch of just like hard charging athletes.
No doubt.
And, you know, to me, that's who I am. Like I always feel most comfortable in that kind of old school, you know, gym environment. And it's crazy, man. I couldn't stop if I tried.
Yeah, that's the fun part, right? Training the athletes. It's the managing the business or as a strength coach, managing administration and coaches and all those things that you gotta work at, you know, if you're gonna be successful in both. But
it's true.
There's some great points in there, you know, you know, the passion of going and just doing something for free, and it's been a part of you kind of throughout your entire life, and that's, you know, that and you must have that. If you don't have passion, it's got to start there. It's got to be rooted there, because it gets monotonous. It gets old if you don't consistently challenge yourself by getting into programs and buying products and constantly learning them. It's part of the reason why we started this show, but it's also seeing athletes' goals and seeing them change their lives through the weight room. And I know that's why you got into this business. You know, talk a little bit about, you know, because you did it before it was cool, right? You did it before, you know, before there was really a personal strength coach or performance strength coach. You weren't going to the gym to be the personal trainer. You were going to be a strength coach. You know, talk a little bit about, you know, how you came to form your philosophy for strength and conditioning for the wrestler, and maybe what a sample program looks like now.
Right. The philosophy definitely was inspired through all the mistakes I made. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I was training like what you would see guys training in a regular bodybuilding gym. And I remember weighing in, or I remember wrestling guys, and I looked intimidating. You know, I had a I looked, you know, really strong. I looked intimidating. I'll never forget in the county tournament. Like, I took down this kid. I put him to his back. And you see him just go, arr. He like just bench pressed me right off of him. And I lost that match by a point. And my coach still brings it up. He goes, you lost that match by point. And that kid won the counties. And that was like a big lesson to me in the fact that, like, if you're not strong, forget it. So, you know, a big influence is not – it's hard to say it was just one person, you know. Coach Ethan Reeve has certainly influenced me. My earlier influences, like I said, a lot of the guys from the Elite FTS website, they really influenced me. Louis Simmons also, when I used to call him every week during my prep, and he was telling me – something that hit home to me about these three wrestlers he was training, and they were 103 and 112 pounders. And he told me they're benching 205 for sets of 3 to 5. And I'm like, damn, I got a figure that's 185 that's benching like 155. Right. And then he talked about dragging a sled for 10 minutes, slamming a medicine ball for 5 minutes, doing things for time. So he got me out of the mindset of, you know, five sets of five, three sets of 10. I started looking at things with time. Then, early in the days when I came across Coach Ethan Reeve, he would post the football workouts on the Dragon Door Forum.
Yep.
And they were very unique. I had never seen a train where he was doing a lot of couplets, but not like wimpy couplets. It would be things like you're going to do power cleans and pull-ups, or you're going to do bench press and like D-ball shouldering with the 150-pound D-ball. Mm-hmm. And he was calling it density training.
Yep.
And he would give them a time limit, or he would say, you know, 8 sets back-to-back or on the minute, every minute doing these things. And then he spoke about what he did when he trained as a wrestler back in the 70s doing, you know, power cleans with his body weight coupled with pull-ups. Yeah. 10 rounds of 10 reps long before, you know, CrossFit was ever around. I mean, this is in the 70s, the early 70s. He was, you know, doing things Mania. For time. So that influenced me. And I saw, number one, you had to be strong. You know, all the guys at Elite FTS, they had a success, a track record of success.
Right.
Louis Simmons, really, I connected with him in his kind of his eccentric manner. Jim and Dave just really inspired me. I would watch, you know, Joe DeFranco, and he was like really like the only guy that I saw him and Jason Ferrugia doing an independent kind of hardcore type thing, whereas the other guys, this was the functional movement. Everybody else was stability ball, one leg, this and that, where Joe was like, listen, box squat heavy, jump, flip tires, carry heavy stuff, do, you know, push your truck around. And those things influenced me. So what I did was I looked at the equipment I had, and I just, you know, those workouts were flawed. But those earlier workouts were full body workouts. They were high intensity. They were heavy weights. But the one thing, Ron, that I will say is a plus is that for my days of bodybuilding, we had such attention to technique. Like, your technique had to be dialed in. You always had to have proper body positioning. Whereas I see sometimes coaches that don't have a lot of experience, they don't really push for proper technique, or they can't manage a large group of people or understand, okay, I need to stop everybody mid-set, bring them back in, reel them in. So I always paid attention to technique, but my influences, you know, definitely came from understanding that being weak will never help you, ever.
Right.
You know, like Mark Bell says, strength is never a weakness. And then learning those couplets, the density training, Louis Simmons, the original special strengths VHS tape, was one that influenced me when guys were doing all those things for time. And then, you know, I had this knowledge, but not really, you know, the best of knowledge, but I was pretty darn knowledgeable, and I had obviously a lot of like in the trenches experience for my own mistakes. And then I think the big mistake that happened is I started getting, for what I think, trying to dial it in too much.
Right.
So I started being like, oh, they've got a wrestling match this weekend, I'm going to have to deload, or this is coming up, I need to back off, or he's a little bit tired, let me wait for him to be stronger. And what happened was I was constantly accommodating everything.
Right.
And what I learned was that, okay, maybe this program is very well organized, but you know what? Nobody's really like breaking the mental barrier that they have. Right. Everything's always perfect. And really the essence of sports is that nothing is perfect. No, nothing's ever absolute. And I started blending now what I call you know, a well-programmed or well-organized program with blending science and hell. Yeah. So making them go through some hellish training to develop the mindset and also dialing it in but not making it perfect, because the last thing I want to do is make kids comfortable. Because I always remember seeing – you see, there's people you're like, man, that program sucks, but that dude's an animal.
Right.
And I know a lot of it. A big part of performance is the mindset. And if the mind is not trained, if there's a lack of confidence or there's a lack of whatever is necessary for that sport, in wrestling, they need to be tough and they need to be mean. If they don't have those things, then I take that into account and I tweak whatever's on the whatever program's on the whiteboard. If I know that Johnny is lacking mental toughness, then I'm not going to be super concerned about box squatting. I'm going to make things a little simpler. I'm going to do a lot of couplets. I'm going to reduce rest periods, and I'm going to make that kid tough. Right. Because I've seen toughness beat over somebody strong and skilled. You know, it goes both ways. It's always flawed, like Buddy Moore says. But, you know, today, even today I make mistakes, but now I'm a lot more obviously dialed in. I've got a lot of experience. I understand basically, like, if a kid walks into that door and he's very skinny and thin looking, then I know I want that kid to do a lot of sled work, a lot of farm walks, a lot of simple things like a clean and press, push-ups with chains, recline rowing, pull-ups. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to worry about a perfect program. I'm going to pack muscle on that kid, and I'm going to push him so I get him tough.
Right.
And I've learned that when you do that, when you get these kids stronger and you get them tougher, that confidence builds up. Or you put muscle on them, they start seeing and experiencing the results. They start feeling, oh man, that kid was beating me, but now I'm beating him. That boosts their confidence.
Sure.
So I take into account a lot more than just, you know, I don't really follow block periodization, conjugate this. I look at what that kid needs, and I attack it. And the tough thing about being an independent strength coach, Ron, is that it's hard to say when your last day is with that kid.
Right.
You know, you hear these business coaches in the fitness industry, I don't really like saying like the fitness industry, you know, it's just kind of like, I feel like that's like always following the fad, but they talk about you need to have some sort of contract, 3 months, 12 months. Let me tell you, last year, when Hurricane Sandy rolled through this area, you think anybody gave a crap if they had a contract when we had no power for 2 weeks, or their house down by the shore is now out in the ocean and they got to rebuild that? Like, we don't know when any of these kids might come and go. So we can't really do this perfect program because, you know, there's just a lack of consistency with younger athletes nowadays, unfortunately. You know, when they're at the D1 level, and I had done some volunteering at the D1 level, you know, there's a lot more control, as you know.
Right.
You know, we're gonna see them pretty consistently. Sure, there's gonna be some of those kids that are tough to connect with, but at independent level, all of a sudden the season starts and it's the kid's first year in high school, and maybe mom's like, holy crap, he's in practice for 3 hours. Forget it, no more lifting. And then you lose that, and then he comes back and you have to kind of start over again from square one. So there's a lot of, you know, I look at it like, you know, I don't look at it just workout to workout, but I have to take into account a very short-term thing. Even though we have a very low attrition rate, through the years, athletes and parents have been less consistent. So back to the ultimate question is, what does a program look like today? If I was to break it down in a real easy to understand way, what I do is I set up mini cycles.
Okay.
Which I set up a 2-week mini cycle. So we have three work
– 2 weeks?
2 weeks. Okay. Yep. I used to actually do a 4 week. 4 weeks became three. Three has now become two. But I'll get to that after I explain our 2 week mini cycle. 2 week mini cycle allows me to repeat the movements the next week, dial in technique, and also have something to measure against. If right. you bench, you know, 225 for five reps, what kind of progress can we make the next week? Can the technique be improved? Better technique is a sign of greater strength. I don't just look at can we lift heavier or add a rep. I look at better technique. Can we make it through the workout feeling less fatigued, less exhausted, you know, have more intensity? Can right. we add a rep, or can we do same weight, same reps, maybe more speed? The main thing is just getting a little bit of repetition in. So that 2 week mini cycle allows me to have some consistency. I don't like doing, you know, a crazy, constantly varied stuff. The workouts will be either a full body or an upper body or a lower body. And I'll tell you how I look at it. We predominantly train wrestlers, but we have swimmers, soccer players, basketball players, fencers, lacrosse, you name it, you know, football, rugby. We have multi-sport athletes. We have some kids that just wrestle, but they wrestle like 20 hours a week, literally. Right. It's insane. You'd be like, how the hell does a 15-year-old get that in? You know, it's just crazy. So I work around those things, but I essentially look at this. We aren't able to say football trains now, you know, at 5 o'clock, wrestlers at 6 o'clock, soccer at 7. So the program is a general physical preparation program, but each kid is getting tweaks when he's in there. So you might be doing box squats. The other guy might be doing sandbag Zercher squats.
Right.
Somebody else might be doing kettlebell goblet squats. There's going to be a bunch of variations of squats going on according to your level. I do full body workouts when I feel like, you know, the general group needs to have more work capacity and blend more athleticism together.
Mm-hmm.
If this is a postseason time and they've cut a lot of weight, or it's after football, or it's after wrestling, then I'm going to do upper lower splits, do a little more volume, put right. some more muscle back on these kids. But even on an upper body day, as long as the weather's good, you know, that one gym I have is very small, so all sled work is outside. The other gym, we have a turf area. But I'll do – so it can be considered full body, because they'll do an upper body workout, but they might have sleds as part of their warm-up and or part of the end of the workout. And really, I got that from Louis Sims way back in the day, him always saying, it never hurts to be in shape. You always got to be in shape.
Yep.
And I don't want people to be out of shape. And a good story that really hit home for me is when I first opened the warehouse gym, the first one, we had a football player prepping for college. And he had, you know, graduated high school, and he was very strong. He could floor press 315 for 3 to 5. He was box squatting 405 for 3 to 5. He could trap bar deadlift 495, but he couldn't do the warm-up. He couldn't do push-ups on the floor. Wow. He couldn't even do bodyweight lunges. He'd get stuck. Obviously couldn't do pull-ups. If I had him do farmer walks with like 100 in each hand, he could do one set. After the second set, the bars were like flying out of his hands. Now, he trained with us only twice a week. And then he would always get mad when he'd feel nauseous through the workout. And I was like, why do you get mad? I was like, you're here twice a week. What do you do on your off days? And he says, well, nothing.
Right.
I go, that's a problem. I go, you take 5 days of rest. You need 5 days of work, 2 days of rest. And I realized this kid was so strong, but he was useless. So I said, there's no reason for you to squat, bench, and deadlift anymore, because you're just killing all that stuff anyway. So I started making him do sleds. I started making him do all the body weight stuff, sledgehammer work, just getting his body moving, high rep kettlebell work. But he needed to be a lot more active. Our right. best guys are the guys that have that blend of strength, explosiveness, mental toughness, stamina. And, you know, in a nutshell, I just call that being athletic.
No doubt.
It's having a blend. Maybe that blend is never going to be perfect, but we've also had – that kid taught me a lesson that I never want anybody to be strong and useless. So now we – our warm-up is very much focused on building athleticism, building speed. Dan John really hit home with that, with how he, you know, had his kids doing tumbling and kettlebell carries. We do all that stuff. And when I train athletes, when I trained them out of my house, we'd go down to a school field. I made the kids do forward rolls on the grass, cartwheels on the grass. And I've been doing it always since then. Coach Reeve always said the same thing. Even if you're a football player, I want you to be able to do shoulder rolls, cartwheels. I want you to be able to walk on your hand. I want you to be able to sprint. I want you to be able to jump. And, you know, it takes a lot of work. You're always going to be flawed. You're always going to be, oh, man, I should have gotten them, should have squatted a little bit heavier. But it's like you're always missing something, but you're just doing your best. That's the key.
Well, you're right. That's athleticism right there. And that's why, you know, you got out of the bodybuilding mindset and got into building athletes, you know, you know, I totally agree with you with sometimes you got to throw out the physiology textbook, you know, sometimes you just got to throw that out. And just because you go and you do a tire flip doesn't make you mentally tough, you know, just because it looks tough doesn't mean it's necessarily mentally tough. But mixing in some challenging situations and varying your training and varying your training tools is definitely going to be a major piece, you know, and that's obviously something where you're trying to replicate some of the challenges that present themselves in a match or a game or anything along those lines. You know, one thing that has always stuck out about me that with you, going back to your bodybuilding roots, like you said, as far as focusing on technique, is that you're not just a guy that throws out a tire or a mace ball or a sandbag or a rock or something along those lines and says, go throw it and lift it or whatever. You are creating some technique protocols for some of these exercises, you know? And so talk a little bit about how you've gone from, you know, training in that garage and having some of these alternative training methods and training tools and really creating a systematic and detailed way of training with those tools.
That's a huge point, because what I always look at is when I talk to coaches is I tell them, listen, we see on Biggest Loser, you know, people that are extremely unfit, don't know how to squat, can't do a push-up, they're flipping tires.
Right.
You know, hips up in the air, chest down, dangerous, curling the weight through, no system. It looks cool, and I think that's, you know, we used to be in that functional craze in the early, you know, part of 2000, and now we've kind of taken it beyond where it's like, if it's not a fancy fad or gimmick, like people don't, you know, think it works. Whereas I always say, listen, the barbell, that's the king of the weight room. So everything needs to have a progression. Just like when we went to school, we went to preschool, then kindergarten, then we went first through fifth, then middle school. You didn't send the seven-year-old to sixth grade and say, hey, do this work. So when I look at, okay, and I always tell coaches when they go through the certification, I tell them this, stop trying to get a tire for everybody's strength level, okay? Right. People need to earn their way, flip that tire. I make them do is create a system and look at things. So I say, how do you get good at a tire flip? I say, here's tire flip on one end of the spectrum. What do we need to do to build up to that? So somebody says, got to have strong pulling muscles. You got to be able to do, you know, pull-ups. Good. That's number one. What else? They say, you got to be good at a deadlift or a squat variation. Absolutely. What else? They say, you have to have athleticism since you're essentially doing a power clean with that tire. I go, good, so what exercise is that? Could be a sandbag, you know, power clean. Could be a dumbbell clean and press. If you have a good weightlifting coach, it could be a hang clean or a power clean.
Yep.
So we basically look at an exercise, or I look at the exercise, and then I work backwards from it. And I say, okay, what are my money exercises? What are my go-to exercises that are going to build ass kickers? That's what I look at.
Yep.
So I think to myself, things I want kids to be able to do are I want them to be able to do various squat variations. If box squat, back squat, front squat, Zercher squat. I want them to be able to deadlift. I want them to be able to do rope climbs, handstand push-ups, bench press, military press. So I work backwards from all that stuff, and we build up, really just going back to what Buddy Morris taught me, is he said, teach exercises that are easy to learn and easy to teach. He goes, if it's too complicated, you're wasting time. He's like, you got to get stuff going. And nothing could be more true than when you're an independent strength coach, because if I knew that I'm going to have this group, you know, at this time all the time, then I could teach them weightlifting. I could take my time. I could go from the bar, whatever, the PVC to the bar and so on. But I'm so like, you know, I have zero expectations now for basically knowing who's going to commit or not. So I look at simple things. We go farm walks. If you can't do pull-ups, we're doing recline rows. If you can't do push-ups, we're doing hand-elevated push-ups. If you have a hard time doing push-ups and recline rows, I know your shoulders and arms are weak, so we're going to do tons of band pull-aparts. Light tricep push-downs like Louis Simmons says. What else is easy to do but you can't mess it up? Sled drags. So I look at a lot of simple stuff that allows us to get athletes moving and basically get results, you know, workout to workout, week to week. So when new kids come to us, new athletes, they're doing farmer walk, walking lunges, sled work. I teach them how to do kettlebell carries. Once I teach them how to do a kettlebell carry, I can teach them how to do a one-arm kettlebell clean. It's really just giving them simple stuff, and I think that people are afraid that, oh no, farm walks don't look cool, you know, or that's nothing, you know, it's not like a trick.
Right.
Well, all I care about is results, and like you said, you know, you got to really care about kids, and when you put the kids first, then you understand that it doesn't matter what the outside world thinks about what you're doing. I don't care if people think what we do is cool or not cool. All I care about, like what you said, is changing lives through the iron. Because I, you know, if I found like the gym, you know, I don't know where I would be, what I'd be doing, you know, and I'm sure that's the case with many of us strength conditioning coaches and athletes. And I see what it does. And my favorite thing is when, like, you know, we got a kid right now. He's a freshman. He weighs 100 pounds. The lightest weight class in New Jersey, actually it's all around the country, it's all the same weight class, is 106 pounds. So he's 102. A lot of those kids that wrestle 106 weight about 112, 115. Yep. They've dropped the 10 pounds or so. So he started at 80 pounds. He showed up with like the hood over him, you know, like he was like, didn't want to be there. He was like scared. And little by little, farmer walks, sled drags, push-ups, then chain push-ups, got him to climb the rope, you know, taught him how to do dumbbell floor pressing, progressed him to kettlebell goblet squats, all kinds of bodyweight work. Our warm-up in itself is a tough workout.
Right.
Now, you know, the kid, we tell him, we're like, dude, I don't think that kid owns a t-shirt with sleeves. I mean, it was like 20-something degrees last week. He showed up, no sleeves on, and he took a gold and a silver in the opening two tournaments as a freshman.
Wow.
And really, you know, just like it's the best thing for me, because as a parent, I can only imagine how his parents feel.
Right.
Kid who used to be very to himself, couldn't make eye contact, walked around with a hood all the time, and now stands tall, no sleeves on. And to me, that's what training's all about. I love seeing them be successful in sport, but I know that what they learn from training with us, like they'll always have that kind of gladiator mentality, that they'll always be able to go out and say, you know what, I'm not going to train at Retro Fitness. I'm going to go to the park and I'm going to crush a bodyweight workout, and I'm going to find a stone and I'm going to do clean and presses with it, and then I'm going to push my truck. And they're always going to be tough. And if they keep that, I know they'll be successful in life, because, you know, jobs and life come with stress, come with challenges. And if you learn to, you know, beat all those obstacles through lifting, you will understand how to apply them. So when I look at training, I look at performance. I look at what's weak on the kid, and I also look at, you know, really, I say to myself, this training has to change the kid's life. Like, I don't see any other way to train people. I actually don't see any other way to do anything in life, to be honest with you. If I do something, I just, like, don't understand any other way than to give it my all. Right. And that's why I think, like, if you're going to coach, if you're going to speak in front of a group, if you're going to mow the lawn, it's not like I just – that's just, like, the only way I understand, like, how to do things, and that was ingrained in me through wrestling. And just, you know, getting on that program design, I don't want to veer off of it, is, you know, don't be afraid as a coach to have people in one group doing different things. We had coaches at my gym from Texas, and they saw what I just told you. Here's the advanced kids box squatting.
Right.
Then there's the intermediate kids maybe doing a kettlebell or sandbag squat variation. And then maybe the beginner kid, he's not even touching weight. He's doing bodyweight lunges and sled drags. And I heard him say, man, I can't run a gym like this. I can't have this kid doing that, this kid doing that. And it does take mental agility. But listen, that's there's a progression to getting people where they're at. And I know you talk to some coaches, they'll say, how do you get somebody better at a box squat? You box squat. How do you get them better at the bench press? You just keep benching. Right. Well, for us as coaches, we're disciplined. We could stay under a barbell for 12 months and not need a variation of it.
Right.
But you're talking about younger athletes, high school athletes, college athletes, even, you know, Joe Ken said when you interviewed him, he's like, NFL guys are like big kids.
Yep.
Yeah. Those guys, Joe even said, he goes, guy goes, I don't squat. Well, what do you do? I leg press. All right, let's get you to the leg press.
That's right.
So you find what needs to be done, and essentially that is like a system. That's a progression.
Right.
But a kid who's weak, who's got a weak trunk, weak legs, weak back, he can't do a bar. He can't put a bar on his back.
Right.
He's too weak. He's got no muscle on his back.
It's what you said earlier. You know, it's you know, there's a great quote by Tommy Moffat that, you know, the kids that you deal with, you're 99.9% of them don't love the weight room as much as you do, you know, as a coach,
yeah,
you know,
I heard that.
But the difference is exactly what you hit on earlier with kids building confidence. All of a sudden they get on that leg press, they kill the leg press. Then they go over that goblet squat and they kill the goblet squat. And then they get, you know, to a trap bar deadlift and they kill the trap bar deadlift.
Yeah.
And that confidence is going to go throughout. And, you know, I shared with everybody, you know, through social media and whatnot, my son is—he's a head smaller than the smallest kid in his class. You know, he's 13 years old. He's a head smaller. He just took the ACT as a 13-year-old, and scored the same score I scored as a senior in high school. All right, football. But he loves football. He loves football, and he loves hockey. But wasn't having a lot of success. You know, he gets into wrestling. I was a wrestler in high school. Gets into wrestling. And I'm setting him up, man. I'm like, look, man, you probably might lose a match. You're probably gonna get pinned. Don't cry. You know, the Joker's been in three tournaments. He's won all three tournaments. He hasn't lost a match yet. You know, and his confidence is just going through the roof. You know, so it's such an important lesson, not just for the athletes, but for coaches as well, because you almost got to build that into your programming. You got to know that by week two, I can change this program up and try something different because they're going to be a little bit more confident, you know. And you touched on another thing that I thought was a great gem as well is you've got to be able to explain like you're explaining to a 10-year-old. Even if you're working with that NFL football player, if you start going off on sarcomeres and, you know, the ATP, and they're going to tune you out. But if you start breaking it down like you're talking to a 10-year-old, and that's what's great about being an independent strength coach is you run the gamut. You've worked with the professional athletes and the professional fighters, but you've also working with Susie, 10-year-old, and having to explain it to her and her mom on why this is helping, and it makes you a better coach. It definitely makes you a better coach.
You have to earn their trust.
No doubt.
You got to earn their trust. And what you said about challenges is critical. You know, there definitely has to be times where you just, like, abandon the weight room. And I'll do that at times where I'm like, man, these kids just need to get like an ass whooping today. They got to get tough.
Right.
And I remember when I was thinking that, I was like, damn, and they loved it. Like some of the kids that weren't as intense in the weight room with the iron, when I made them like running with sandbags, wrestling each other on the front lawn, tug of war, flipping tires, then they like opened up. It was like they needed to be out of the cage or something. And I have this old, some guy actually dropped it off. It's a very long story, but a long story short, when I first opened the gym, a guy was out front and gave me a shopping bag of VHS tapes of Dr. Ken training and all those old Brooks Cubic Dino files, the old ones. So I was watching the Dr. Ken tapes, and he was at one of the Virginia schools. I can't remember which it was, but dude, those workouts were, you know, light years on the other side of the spectrum from being anything optimal. Yep. He kicked crap out of those kids in ways I never saw. And, but they were into it. Like the whole team was like gathering around, and they were just, what I think became important was that the hell that they went through together, like bonded them like a, you know, like a special forces military unit. Yep. They got tough. They suffered together. They trained and overcame the obstacles together. And sometimes that's what you got to do as a coach. You know, when you hear about auto-regulation, training according to their energy levels, you also need to look at the mental state of where they're at. And if they're not at the mentality that they need to be, then maybe you need to pull out, you know, the Navy SEAL type training, and you need to take them through some of those hellish things. And I actually did a short 12-hour Navy SEAL challenge. Some of my friends are former Navy SEALs, and we had them come out and do it. And some guys that follow me in New Jersey are a basketball coach and a lacrosse coach, and their booster club paid me to come and first train the basketball team. And they hadn't won a basketball game. They were 0-5 at the time. They brought me out. It was like the day after Christmas, early, and I just beat the crap out of them. And each thing was like a challenge, and each challenge had to make them work together. It was there was no individuals. It was like, you're as strong as the weakest guy here, and if you can't be a team, and let me tell you, like, you know, like you said, like physiologically, those kids should have performed worse as every 5 minutes passed, but they didn't.
Right.
They, after the first hour, it got better and better. I think I was with them for like 3 hours. I mean, we're talking kids that really, you know, 10 push-ups is a stretch for them.
Right.
They had to keep doing things until they got it right. And then their next game, they went back and they won in overtime. And the coach said that they had that mentality. And they didn't get stronger all of a sudden after that three-hour workout, but they had a different mindset. And I found oftentimes that you could train kids awesome. You could be the best strength coach, but if they don't have this, then it all goes out the window.
Well, it all comes down to, I mean, you could have the best program on paper, but unless you can get them to do it and buy into it and believe in it, then it doesn't really mean anything either. And you know, I thought you made a great point there with, you know, you're not only periodizing your training program, but periodizing the mental part of it as well, and having a plan there, and having opportunities where you go. And like I said, you throw the physiology textbook out the window. And you mix things in. It can't dominate your program, but you absolutely need to throw some things in from time to time to where the guys know that they went above and beyond what they thought that they could do.
You know? It's the art of coaching. Yeah,
no doubt. Well, Zach, I mean, freaking, we could talk all night long about this stuff, man. But you know, one of the things that we kind of always finish these episodes off with is a motivational quote. Give me something that's plastered in your weight room. Maybe a quote that you've lived by kind of going throughout your coaching career.
One of the earliest quotes that really inspired me was, I used to train at this gym was called Diamond Gym, and it was basically like, or it was like the West Side Barbell of bodybuilding. Like that was when I saw bodybuilders doing rack pulls, squatting, you know, it was commonplace for those guys to bench 315. There was guys dumbbell benching the 150s. That was when I learned, you know, about the right training. And there was an old squat rack, and right up above the old squat rack was an old photo of Tom Platz. Looked like college days. Had like six plates bar bending on his back. And next to that photo was just a little quote framed, and it was like written, and somebody looked like they wrote it with a fine ink pen, and it said, "There are those that do and those that don't. Those that will and those that won't." And that quote, like, I remember, like, you get under that squat bar and you see Tom Platz looking at it, and you see that quote, and it was like, you would go through hell. And the leg room, the gym was an old bank, so it was like rooms, so that was like a leg room. And I was training when I was bodybuilding there. My training partner was also a former wrestler. And man, dude, we just like went to war under that squat rack. That's so awesome. Many times. And I think that quote, like, there, and it's just so true. There are those that will and those that won't, those that do and those that don't. And then the one that I have at my gym in Edison, that was the first one. And I can't remember where I heard it from, or I mean, I know somebody else said this, obviously, but you have the two pains in life. You have the pain of discipline and the pain of regret. And the pain of discipline goes away once you, I can't remember what it is, like once you taste victory or taste success, but the pain of regret will haunt you for a lifetime. And that quote, you know, really, that's what inspires me to be a coach, because I always regret, you know, my lack of success as a wrestler. And I tell kids, I go, "Fellas, I'm 38. But I go, I remember my last wrestling match as if it happened 1 minute ago."
No doubt.
And I go, "This is your opportunity. You know, I don't care if you wrestle in college or play football or whatever you do in college." I go, "But when you're here, be here." I go, "When you wrestle, when you play football, soccer," I go, "you need to give it your all." Yep. And that's, you know, I really, I'm always honest about that. And I tell people, I go, "Listen, you know, I have that pain of regret that haunts me for a lifetime." And kids today, you know, with all these independent strength coaches and all these opportunities, kids today have the opportunity to be transformed into just monsters, right, if they choose to do the work.
No doubt.
So that is, I think, really big. And I think that quote, you know, athletes need to see that, because they need to understand that you must be disciplined to succeed. Right. Oh, I'm going to do my, you know, I'm going to do my video games. I'm going to do that.
You hit it right there on the head. Like, I mean, it's a reset mentality. If I'm not winning the Madden game, I go hit reset. And with sports and opportunities and these days through high school are so precious that you'll remember them for the rest of your life, or college or pro, whatever. You'll remember that for the rest of your life. And so that is a great quote. Give us, you threw out some great resources earlier. You threw some old school stuff at us that I love. Dr. Ken, the whole deal, man. But yep. give me a book that you would recommend for a strength coach to read.
Yeah, a lot of people are always shocked by this, but I think every strength coach should read Lone Survivor by Marcus Luttrell, and No Easy Day by, the pen name Mark Owen, but I'm sure everybody knows his real name.
Yep.
I think those two books, they teach you as a coach to be able to overcome obstacles and to be okay with the challenges that you'll face. If you're an independent coach, you face challenges of when you're slow, or when, you know, you don't agree with the way parents are, or when you get frustrated with the way kids are. If you're in the collegiate setting like yourself, you kind of ingrain the mental toughness, and you're okay with waking up early, staying late, you know, lack of vacation, there on the weekends, putting in the extra time, traveling. So I think there's something to truly be said about what we could learn from, you know, some of the world's finest warriors.
No doubt.
Also the pride that they take, the pride that they take in country, the pride that they take in team, that's something that's really hit home for me. So I think every coach should definitely read No Easy Day and Lone Survivor. I mean, I'm here in my office. I got so many books. I've got two.
No, that's good, man. Those are
two big bookshelves. I would say, this is what I'm going to say. Go on eBay and pick up a bunch of old health and strength magazines from the 50s and 60s. and look at what those guys were doing, and you'll see that it's like all weightlifting, all powerlifting, and a blend of some like bodyweight training and gymnastics work. I'm throwing out a lot of books. You know, a book that really hit home to me was the original Secrets of Soviet Sports and Fitness Training, now Secrets of Russian Fitness, you know, Russian Training, yep. Dr. Jesse's.
Yep.
I love reading Louis, so I love the West Side Book of Methods. All the books that Pavel has written, Dan John has written, Marty Gallagher is very influential. And there's a lot, there's these older books, Fitness and Strength Training, it's called. If you go on Amazon, they tend to be combined together with like that book that Lou always recommends, Explosive Power, yeah. Jumping yeah. Ability. There's a lot of those. I think some of the like professors that wrote it, they're definitely like European guys.
Right.
So those are all fantastic books. And I'm going to say also, books are great, but like what you said, go out and attend the seminars, especially the seminars where they make you lift.
Yep.
Because it's I think I've learned some of my greatest stuff from guys that haven't written books. Like Mark Bell has been a huge influence to me.
That's a great point.
He's a great guy. He hasn't written any books, but he did a seminar at our gym with Jesse Burdick 3 years ago. And what I learned from those two guys 3 years ago has big time shaped everything I've been doing since then.
Right.
So, you know, some guys just don't write books.
That's a great point. You know, I always tell people with this show specifically, I try to get, you know, influencers or originators of a concept, you know, Cal Dietz, triphasic training, or Joe Kinn, tier training, you know. When you go straight to the source, you get a lot more information, you know, and they can help you navigate some of the landmines that you'll face.
And Joe is, you know, I spoke with Joe a couple months ago, and he's just, you know, he's such a genuine guy, you know. He, when he was at Louisville, they were playing Rutgers, and my Edison gym is like 10 minutes from Rutgers, and he brought the coaches, the strength coaches, to train at the gym. And it was so funny. He said, house rules are you guys do the workout that Zach puts together. You know, I was like, what do you guys want to do? And he said, house rules are they do what you want them to do. And it was awesome to see.
Right.
They didn't bat an eye. They went to it. And Joe was doing his own workout. This gym is 1,000 square feet.
Oh, yeah.
Joe's doing his, like, weightlifting and all his, like, tricep stuff on the ground. And these guys are doing – I had them doing – ring push-ups and like heavy one-arm rows on a globe dumbbell, and then we're doing like dumbbell clean and press and prowler pushes, and we went out to eat, and it was just awesome being around Joe, the high level that he had, like the standard that he holds,
yep.
The way those coaches were working for him, and you know, it's just, you know, I really respect the guys. I respect all these guys so much. But Joe is that's an amazing guy, man.
Definitely. No, he's a great guy. Great guy. And just got the strength coach of the year and the whole deal.
Yeah.
So he's well deserving.
Absolutely.
Actually, before we go on, you'll appreciate this. My kids, you know, they're 16, 13, 13, and 12 now, right? So my wife got them all Kindles, which I hated, but she got them all she got them all Kindles. So my son, before he could do anything on the Kindle, Facebook or any of that crap, He had to download Lone Survivor and read it before he could do anything. So
good for you. That appreciate book, that. I tell kids, I tell the parents at the gym, I say, Lone Survivor is required reading.
Yeah, that's right.
Do all them read it? No. But we gave out a bunch of copies of Lone Survivor and No Easy Day. And I guess the publisher or like the publicist for No Easy Day saw it all over Instagram. So the CEO that wrote it called our gym, and we sent it out to him, and he signed the books for the kids.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I don't think they quite get it. You know, when 9/11 happened, I was a teacher, and I live in Central Jersey. We're like 45 minutes from the city. So these kids were babies, but I saw, you know, the cloud.
Oh, yeah.
you know, the world changed when that happened, and that really changed the way I look at what these men do, you know, for you and I as parents to be able to, you know, kiss our kids goodnight safely.
Yep.
And that's why I tell kids, like, they need to understand, you know, they, you know, the training is so much more than the win or the loss or the points on the board. So I'm trying to get across life lessons. And that's why I'm okay with if my kid doesn't squat 405, but if he's a tough mofo,
right,
saying, then I think that might help him.
No, I agree.
He was just, if I got him, you know, just strong, trying to, you know, blend a lot of things in there, and, you know, it'll never be perfect, but I'll just always give my best. That's all I'll do.
That's all you can do. That's all you can. It sounds like you're doing more than your best, man. Well, real quick, and we'll get you out of here. But give me. I know you're not a technology guy, but at the same time, you're all over the internet. You know, give me when you're surfing the net. Give me a website that you go to, and then if there's any kind of technology, any kind of an app that you use for your own productivity or with your athletes.
I'm looking at my phone. I don't use any. I don't really use that. I mean, I use Instagram a lot just to share out my stuff.
Yeah,
like,
you did a good job.
I like to inspire a lot of people. I don't have like any apps on my phone. I do listen to books on audio if you drive or travel a lot. I used to drive a lot. I don't drive as much, so I think Audible would be great for strength coaches, especially at your level, because you guys are oftentimes required to travel with the team. So I think it's good to have something like that. For me, I like to read at night. It sounds crazy, but it's like it calms my mind. So Audible, I think, would be a great app. And what was the other part to the question?
A website that you...
Oh, a website that I go to. Let me take a look at like a common website that I'm going to. Let's see what I have here. Let's see what I'll go to. Trying to think of guys that I try to believe it or not, I don't follow too many independent strength coaches.
Right.
Because I don't want to be, especially guys that aren't like gym type coaches, because I don't want to be influenced by what they're doing. I really like what John Welborn does at CrossFit Football.
Okay.
But I like what he does. His website is called Talk to Me Johnny, and he always puts a lot of cool like life lessons learned at the end of every year. And I took a couple snapshots of some of the ones that he shared, and it's really good. So Talk to Me Johnny is good. I'm trying to think of training. I Jim Wendler, I wish he updated his blog more, but he's got his independent website. I'll still go to Elite Juggernaut Training Systems. Does a good job of putting out regular info. But believe it or not, like Instagram now, like following like a lot of these coaches, they'll like share out and link up certain things. I'm also highly influenced by people that are not really strength coaches, but like that guy CT Fletcher.
Yeah,
I like how he's just coming out and saying, "Look, be a bad mofo." I mean, I know he drops a lot of F-bombs, and everybody yells at him like, "Oh, the technique, that technique." But you know what he's getting at is like, stop following the rules, stop being babies. Like, you know, train, be strong, and you know, to me, I respect that stuff. You know, I really respect that stuff. I go to Louis's website a lot. I feel like I could connect with that a lot. This is what I want. Let me tell you what podcasts I'm subscribed to.
Yep.
I love your podcast. Got that in there. So let me take it from the bottom. Here and there, I listen to the Joe Rogan Experience.
Yeah.
And it's a funny one. The School of Greatness by Lewis Howes.
Yeah, he does a good job.
Is very good. I Love Marketing. Those guys are great.
Yep.
A buddy of mine, we wrestled together. He was a freshman when I was a senior. He owns a really successful wrestling club in New Jersey. His podcast is called Wrestling Life, and it's really about – it's more for, like, former wrestlers, like coaches and guys that used to wrestle. Mark Bell Powercast. I love his Powercast. I got yours here if you could see. You're not going to see it, but I got yours there.
Appreciate
it. The guys from Barbell Shrugged and Barbell Business. Yeah, the same guys. Sometimes I listen to Entrepreneur on Fire. Paul Mort is a fitness marketing podcast. And Social Triggers by Derek Halpern is a also fitness marketing podcast. But I learn a lot training-wise. I would say yours and Mark Bell's are probably the ones that give me the most training.
I'm a
member of Kelly Starrett's membership website.
Yep.
And I constantly refer back to his YouTube videos.
He does a good job of those. Absolutely.
And I also think that, you know, not, I don't know, I don't want to come off as arrogant, but, you know, coaches, we create our networks, so I'm able to text message guys like Kelly Starrett. I could send Mark Bell a video and say, critique me on this.
Sure.
I could email Kelly Starrett and say, dude, my shoulder's killing me. Brian McKenzie from CrossFit Endurance, I'll be like, dude, I'm going to send you video footage of me running. And then he'll be like, okay, you're reaching too much. You're working too much on this.
Right.
You need to do mobility on your T-spine. So I'm lucky to have developed friendships, you know, first and foremost. I mean, these are – if we weren't strength coaches, these are the dudes I'd be wanting to hang out with anyway.
No doubt.
So I'm always learning, and I'll leave it like this because I know I can never answer a question fast. I'm horrible at that, Ron. I'll leave it at this is my advice as a strength coach is always be a white belt, meaning don't ever say I'm grandmaster and now I don't need to learn. I don't need to listen to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I don't need to go to this, you know, seminar. The past 2 years, I've made it an effort to host and attend seminars. Which I hadn't done for a long time, and I'm busier than ever. You know, I have 2 kids, 2 gyms, and I've learned how to do weightlifting. You know, I never wanted to learn weightlifting because in the early days, Louis Simmons and all the guys at Elite were saying, that's too complicated to learn weightlifting, too complicated. And now I'm learning it for myself to make me a better coach because I need to prep kids for college.
Sure.
You know, I can't be sending kids to college. You don't know how to do a clean. You don't know how to do a snatch. And my job as a coach is, you know, not so much just, you know, change lives, but also I don't want college coaches to be like, oh, you're coming from that gym. That didn't help us. You know, Zach's not helping us out any. I like, you know, being able to help coaches as much as I can. What we're going to start doing is when we have kids that are going to go to college, we're going to create a program for them where in the summer – they train and they do things that are prepping them. So when they show up in the weight room, it makes the strength coach job a little easier. And the kid knows how to do the weightlifting, and he's not gonna, you know, give the guy a headache.
No, that's huge, man. That's huge. Well, Zach, you know, if nothing else is evident by this interview, you're a man of passion, and you're fully committed to your athletes, and that's what strength and conditioning is all about. You know, is a guy that will give his left and right arm for his kids and will do everything he can to try to educate himself and put the best program out there. And I mean, I've got about 3 pages of notes here that I took, man. So I appreciate you coming on the show and spending a little time with us. I want you to stay on because I got some questions for you, but I want to wrap this up with you and truly appreciate you coming on, brother.
Cool. Thanks to everybody for watching. And Ron, really an honor to be part of the – I mean, you've got really the A-list. You're like the Hollywood of strength conditioning A-list.
I don't know about all that.
So really honored to be here. I mean, really honored. Thank you.
No problem, bro. Thanks a lot, man.
Take care, everybody.
All right, guys, a couple quick things before we let you go. First, go to ronmckeefrey.com/40 to be able to access the show notes for this episode with all the links and books and websites that we mentioned throughout the episode. While you're there, join me in the comments section to let Zach know how much we appreciate him coming on the show for his time and his efforts and sharing things with us, as well as any feedback that you may have for me as to questions or future guests or anything along those lines. Also, while you're there, make sure you join the email list. I send you a once a week email just kind of letting you know who the latest episode is, along with what's the latest Tribe TV video and then any announcements that I may have. Don't rent, don't sell, don't give away your email at all. I just make sure that that you guys are staying in touch with me and what we have going on at Iron Game Chalk Talk. Strength on Demand is a product that Rob Taylor and myself created. It's an online archive of strength and conditioning presentations that we're kind of, you know, that we're updating. It's a great resource. If you enjoy Iron Game Chalk Talk, you'll like Strength on Demand. It's strength-ondemand.com. You'll be able to access over 50 clinic presentations on any device from anywhere and watch them on your own time. So it's a great resource for you guys out there. You can also connect with us on iTunes, connect with us on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to us there so you can get you make sure that you get these things automatically downloaded, or you can wait for the email each week and get updated by me. But appreciate you being there. Appreciate you spending some time with us, and we'll see you next week with another great episode. Take care.